Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
If you felt a little warmer today, it's because pitchers and catchers reported in Florida. Tomorrow on Valentine's Day, first pitchers and catchers workouts. Then on Monday the 18th, position players report. Tuesday, a first full squad workout, and then we'll be at spring training after that next week as a show. Right now, though, because it's radio and we can do it, let's go to spring training to talk to Barry Sferluga of the Washington Post. Wrote a story that we enjoyed last night. Came out online, and you see it in the Post today. As spring training opens, the Nationals have built a team, and Bryce Harper isn't on one. Barry, you basically wrote what Danny and I have been saying that we believe is the case, and I think you worded it carefully, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you said that as far as the baseball operation goes, Mike Rizzo, his staff of people who know baseball, they are moving on without Bryce Harper. They don't plan on signing Bryce Harper. But you didn't say the Nats are out, and I wonder if that's because, like, we're speculating, you're not sure that at some point Boris doesn't call Ten Lerner and Mike Rizzo finds out that Bryce Harper's his again.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that on February 13th. I would have said that on November 13th. Mm-hmm. I think this is always been an ownership decision. And I think that, you know, Mike Rizzo's job and the baseball operations department's job is to inform ownership to the best of their ability of what the case they think should be made, either for keeping a player or signing or, you know, getting rid of a player, any of those things. But I think some of the timeline here is interesting. We've talked and we've known about the 10-year, $300 million offer that the Nationals made to Harper. It's important to remember that that offer was made when they were the only team that could negotiate with him before he became a free agent. What we've learned now, or what I've learned, is that that offer came off the table once free agency started. It was not an offer that just hung over Harper for the whole winter and he could come back to it any time. The Nationals understandably said, we can't be held hostage in any situation. We need to go build our team. And that's exactly what they did. Patrick Corbin for 6 years and $140 million, a second baseman and Brian Dozier, two catchers, a couple relievers, starting pitcher and Anibal Sanchez, et cetera, et cetera. So they have a team. Now, it's a long-winded way of saying that, coming back to the original point, which is, this is still an ownership decision, and Scott Boras and Ted Lerner have a long working relationship of getting deals done. They did Max Scherzer. They did Rafael Soriano. To a certain extent, they did Matt Wieters. I would be surprised if those two parties didn't revisit the topic at some point. But the baseball operations department of the Nationals has their team, and they think it's a contending team.
Barry, I want to drill down on that last part there, because here's what I've always believed, that – everybody in the building is in lockstep, except sort of the emeritus owner almost. Because day-to-day, it's Mark Lerner who's in charge. But Ted Lerner is still around, and if he decides to step in, he can. I've always argued that Scott Boras, right before pen goes to paper for Bryce Harper, whomever he's going to sign with, there's one last phone call to the bat phone in Ted Lerner's office with the door closed to say, do you want to match or beat this? Would you tend to agree with that?
Yeah, logically, Danny, I think that makes sense. I don't know for a fact that would be the case. But, you know, certainly if it was Philadelphia who was about to sign Harper, you know, you would think that Harper's camp would go back and say, guys, he's about to sign in the division. Do you want to see him 18 or 19 times a year? Does that change your thinking at all? And if it doesn't, that's fine. A team that is, you know, potentially going to sign Harper also would have some leverage in saying, hey, we have this offer on the table now. You need to take it or not, and try to not allow them to go back. But again, the important thing to remember here is the Lerner-Boras relationship and what that has accomplished in the past. I don't think that Mike Rizzo is down in West Palm spending a lot of time thinking about what he would do if Bryce Harper signed back here. He would admit, and anybody should admit, that a lineup that includes Bryce Harper is better than a lineup that doesn't. But as we've said, they are very comfortable with the team that they've assembled, and they think it's a contender in the NL East.
Barry Sforluga live here on Grant and Danny. Bryce Harper is still a free agent a day before Valentine's Day, with pitchers and catchers reporting all over the country. The original report, I think it was Chelsea at the Post, had started the offseason was 10-300. So if we work off of that, I think Nightingale said 284 with deferments. Let's assume it's around $300 million, though. Here's where I'm curious, Barry. Do we know right now? We haven't heard numbers. Like, if he and Boris said no to that offer because they were going to do better, and now they're not doing better, and he actually ends up signing for around 280 because that offer's off the table elsewhere and the Nats moved on, A, won't that look bad for Harper and Boris as if they took a pretty big loss? And then B, I guess more importantly to Nats fans, will that make them think, even though the timeline doesn't play out this way, that Bryce chose another team for cheaper over the Nationals? That's one concern I would have for his camp and how he's going to be viewed in this.
So I'm not going to evaluate the deal until it's done, because I mean, I'll be honest. I know the one offer, and that's from the Nats. I know of no other offers. I know no other numbers. I'm not going to speculate that he hasn't gotten more or he has gotten more. I mean, I just don't know. What I would say is that what Bryce Harper chose was free agency. And that doesn't mean he's choosing not the Nationals. What he chose was the opportunity to hear from other teams, to make a choice, to see what else was out there. If I were a Nats fan and he signs elsewhere, even if it is for less than $300 million, your point about the timeline, Grant, is correct. I mean, you can't just kind of rearrange those deck chairs and say, well, he signed for 280 with Philly. That means he wanted to play with Philly more than 300 with the Nats, because those two things did not exist at the same time. But in terms of guessing what he's going to get or what is on the table right now, I'm out of that business. It's a dangerous one. It's a dangerous one to get into.
Yeah, and as you said, there's no numbers that we know of out there. So it's basically what you've heard, who said, she said kind of deal. I get that. Going back, though, to the idea of him hitting free agency, which I'm all for, a player's doing that. You get a couple bites at this apple. You've worked your whole life to get that money. I do wonder, though, look, if the fan offered me at the end of my contract like a $10,000 salary, and I say, no, I'll go get more elsewhere, and then I settle on $5,000 from the team 980, I made a bad business decision. Do you think it'll be viewed as an L for Boris, who generally wins these things, if he signs for less than the original offer from the Nationals?
Yeah, that's different. I mean, that is a different evaluation. If he did sign for less, then yes, I think, unless he was able to articulate, look, I really wanted out of Washington, which would be the complete opposite of what he said in the past, and would not make him look good. I don't think that that would be true, and I don't think that it is true. There are other ways that he could get less than $300 million, and Boris could still describe it as a win, and that would be if it was like 5 for $200 and he was the highest AAV, highest annual average value at $40 million a year or something like that. You could paint a picture where take 5 for $200 million. That would allow him to go back into free agency at age 31. It would beat Zach Greinke as the highest average annual value in the history of the game, and you could say, you know, in the end, we did our job. I have no idea whether that is a possibility. It seems like long-term stability has always been important to Harper. But, you know, this evaluation in midstream, when we don't know what we're evaluating, is true. I find difficult.
Our buddy Barry Sforluga is with us. Great column in the Washington Post about where the Nationals stand with and then kind of maybe without Bryce Harper here going forward. What do you make of the big picture, though, Barry, of free agency? I know a lot of players have weighed in. I don't want to speak for Grant, but a lot of us say, yeah, it's obviously a headline that Machado, Harper, Craig Kimbrell and company haven't signed, but the players acting like that's the same as, I don't know, Danny Valencia, a negative war player not having a contract. That's all the same. It's not. The market's telling people one thing, and it seems like the players don't want to admit that that's the case.
Yeah, I see both sides of this one, actually. I had a conversation with Sean Doolittle, who's been pretty active on Twitter about about it a couple of weeks ago. And if you listen to some players and some agents, they will describe kind of a change in the way that owners or clubs have pursued players in free agency. It's not like they're coming to the players and saying, this is where you would fit. This is what we think of you. This is how we envision your role. This is our offer. See what else you have and come back to us. It's much more passive. And there may be a lot of reasons for that. You hit free agency when you're older. You know, usually the Harper and Machado are obviously outliers at 26. Usually it's 29, 30, 31 when you have your 6 years of service time. Older players are not as valued as they once were. We can debate that all day, but that's the case. They're not valued at, you know, $9 million a year when you can sign a similarly capable player or that you have under control at the minimum salary. So I get the player's frustration, but I did look at the remaining, it's not 100 anymore, it's probably 95 free agents. And if you take the position players out there, aside from Machado and Harper, position players with an OPS that is above the major league average last year, there are five remaining. I think Mike Moustakas is the headliner there. So there's some consternation. Why doesn't Adam Jones have a job? Well, Adam Jones is not good at the end of his contract with the Orioles either. Is he a player in decline? What is the player in decline valued at? You know, those deals for Cecil Fielder, nine-figure deals for players like that, they're just not going to be there anymore. So it's an interesting time in labor in baseball, even though we're 3 years away from the CBA expiring, and I'm not sure exactly how it will play out. I see both sides of it.
Barry Sfraluga, writing about baseball in the Post, is always a must-read. We'll hopefully see you down in Florida next week. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
Barry.
You bet. Check out the Washington Post for Barry's story on the Nats, moving on from Bryce Harper, at least the baseball operation. Again, Ted Lerner's got a phone, too. His office phone is working.
There are phones on South Capitol Street.
Case Keenum is going to be a free agent, most likely. Could the Redskins have interest in him? We'll get into that at 1:30 today. Next, your spotlight on the Nats. Pitchers and catchers reported today. Some new faces to break down next on Grant and Danny. Case Keenum is out of a starting job. The Broncos have traded for Joe Flacco today. That was the big breaking news out of the NFL. Seems like an item a day from that league keeps, well, the doldrums away, because
indeed,
something seems to be breaking while we're on the air day in and day out from the National Football League. But let's get to your Nats spotlight. Pitchers and catchers reported they are on site in West Palm Beach. And what that means is you and I can kind of go around the horn with some of the new faces. We'll start with just the mound and the backstop. Those two roles were the two position groups have shown up at camp. Patrick Corbin, come on down. Welcome to Washington, D.C. 29-year-old native of Clay, New York. He's 6'3". He's 210 pounds. He's left-handed. He's coming off a career year. Pitched 33 times to a 3.15 earned run average last season in Arizona. Matter of fact, he's gone two straight seasons without missing a trip in the rotation. 200 innings for the second time in his career last year, struck out a career-best 246 batters. 8.5 strikeouts per nine innings over the course of his six seasons. Last year, 11.1 per nine. Walked barely over two batters. He was an all-star. He finished fifth in the NL in Cy Young balloting. He was the best pitcher in free agency available and on the market. The Nats signed him for 6 years and $140 million under contract through 2024.
This is something you and I said they needed to do. Not necessarily Corbin, but a guy that, in case Steven Strasburg falters, you need a 2A as your number three, if that makes any sense.
And if he's there, you need a guy in game three of a division series that can put a series away, which they haven't had when they're debating between Gio and Roark. It's been two guys and then kind of keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah, and Corbin takes the ball every fifth day, can turn in a gem here, there, and everywhere. He's good. I will go next down the list, my friend. Let's keep it simple. Talking Max Scherzer. This is, if he's not the best pitcher in the game, maybe he's second, maybe he's third. It's DeGrom, it's Kluber, it's was Kershaw, but Scherzer's right there at the top of the list. He's given everything that you would ever want in a starting pitcher. That deal is a bargain that he signed several years ago. Got off to a pretty good start as a Nationals ace. and then really took it to the next level, making mid-30s starts, ERA sub 3 each of the last four seasons. You're talking about a guy that might lead the league in strikeouts yet again. You don't hit the ball hard off him. You don't get on base against him. Other than that, he's very hittable. He's a star.
Anibal Sanchez is now a Washington National. Last year, you saw him a couple times because he was pitching in the division for the Atlanta Braves. He is older, 34 years old. In fact, he'll turn 35 during spring training. Native of Venezuela, he goes back to 2006 as a 22-year-old with the Marlins. In fact, that was when I was super high on Anibal Sanchez. 2.8 ERA and 17 starts that.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
He was unbelievable. Was one of the best rookies in baseball. He has finished top five in Cy Young balloting once. He did that in 2013 in a marvelous campaign with the Detroit Tigers. I believe he was on the same staff as Max Scherzer that year. They spent some time together in Detroit. So now he links back up with Scherzer in D.C. after a terrific year last year with the Braves. The question is, can he recapture any of that magic? You go back two seasons ago with the Tigers, he was horrendous. Year before that with the Tigers, he was bad. Year before that with the Tigers, he wasn't any good. So it was a three-year run of ERAs of 5, 5, 8, and 6-4, where you went, this guy's going to be out of baseball soon. And then he came to the National League last year. He pitched two dozen times in Atlanta, had a sub-3 ERA. He doesn't strike many batters out. But last year he did. One per inning, 8.9 per nine, didn't walk anybody. He was awesome. The Nationals trying to catch a little lightning in a bottle here. 2 years, $19 million, 21 team options, so could be a three-year deal. This is very affordable. This is the kind of deal that I love, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You kick the tires on a veteran. Generally, I'd go 1 year for these guys. But if you can get something out of Anibal Sanchez, there's value to this. Six innings of competitive baseball at a time, keep you in some games. Pitch to, let's say, a 4.0, 3.9 earned run average. You got a shot adding this right-hander to bolster your rotation.
This is one of those late career renaissance type stories in Sanchez. Last year threw the cutter more than he ever had. His true fastball a lot less than he ever has. All of a sudden, he's a different pitcher than he was a couple years ago, at least. So the Nats hope. Let's go to Steven Strasburg, GP. This is, to me, the kind of make or break. What Strasburg did you get could determine the ceiling for this team. And I hope that's not oversimplifying. The guy that was available for 28 starts 2 years ago now in 2017, the second half after he came back from a brief DL trip, he was the best pitcher in the world. He was incredible, culminating in that mucus game in Chicago in the misty rain.
Is that what we're calling it? It's not the sock game, it's the mucus game?
I'm going with the mucus game. I don't know if you've got a better one, by all means, let's replace it.
I've never heard one, so I'll take that. I like that.
The Dusty Baker, sometimes the air conditioning can leave your nose stuffed up. He
was
incredible.
That's a good one, the air conditioning in Chicago game.
Yeah, the mold. He was incredible in that game and that whole series. He was excellent down the stretch. If they get something approaching that, the guy that before this is basically a low threes ERA guy who's going to turn in a pretty good start. Two out of the three times he shows up, get you deep into a ball game, strike enough hitters out, fielding independent pitching sub three, again, most of the last several seasons, last year notwithstanding. If you get that guy back who makes close to 30 starts, this is a group that's going to compete for the division.
Yan Gomes is your new starting catcher. Yan Gomes is 31 years old. He's a Brazilian native who was a 10th-round pick in June of 2009 out of Barry University in Miami Shores, Florida. He has played in Toronto for a season and with the Cleveland Indians for six seasons. Now he comes to the NL for the first time to play with Washington. Here's your profile on Yan Gomes. He's got pretty big power for a catcher. Hit 21 homers in 2014, won the Silver Slugger Award. Hit 16 homers to lead catchers in the American League last year. He has been an all-star. It was last season at 30 years old for the first time. And last year, his .266 average was one of the highest in the sport at his position as well. He's a career .250 hitter. He's going to have some good at-bats. He's going to drive the baseball. He can drive in runs. Drove in 74 runs at one point in time. There is some injury history to him. That goes around that clubhouse, as you know. The Nats generally don't have a whole lot of concern about signing guys with injury history, and oftentimes that blows up in their face. But the contract is one that you just had to roll the dice on. He is signed through this coming season as part of a six-year, $23 million deal with team options in 2020 and 2021. So you've got your starting catcher not just for this season, but probably for the next 2 years as well at $9 and $11 million, or you can buy him out either one of those years for just $1 million. He starts. Kurt Suzuki is back as your backup. You go from Matt Wieters, who wasn't hitting, wasn't staying healthy, nice guy, handled the pitching staff pretty well, to a better defensive catcher, better receiver, with better power who will produce more runs. It's a big upgrade. Welcome to D.C., Yan Gomes.
You mentioned Kurt Suzuki. Whisper quiet. I mean, mouse fart in church quiet, okay? Kurt Suzuki has put up two really good offensive seasons back-to-back. This is here his last 2 years average. 277, 342 on base, 830 OPS, averaging about 16 and a half home runs per season. That's pretty darn good at the catcher spot. It's not like when you and I were growing up, GP, and catchers were hitters too. This new era where it's basically JT Realmuto and everybody else stinks at hitting, that's a couple pretty good offensive years. Good energy guy, not a tremendous defensive catcher at this stage, but again, a guy that bounces around back there is a pretty good athlete at the catcher position. So what's happened in these last several years, Matt Wieters has gotten hurt. Wilson Ramos has gotten hurt. And then it's the Pedro Severino and Name That Key Boom show, and it hasn't gone according to plan. They solidified this position. Let's say Yan Gomes slips on a banana peel and he can't go for 2 months. You're fine with Kurt Suzuki. This is a plus position now for the Nationals. It was a dramatic weakness. This is the largest area of upgrade over these last couple of years that they've undertaken.
Last one, I'll make it quick. Eric Fetty. Might be now or never time, my friend. Former first round pick, I should say, to UNLV, the 18th overall pick in the 2014 draft. High expectations, top prospect, flew through the minor leagues, got to the big leagues in 2015. In fact, we saw Eric Fetty pitch at the major league level in 15 innings in 2017, and the thought was, this might work out. He's got a good breaking ball, good fastball. He's just never put it together. He's never really fooled anybody. And if you look at his track record at this point, at the major league level, he has now pitched over the last couple of seasons in 14 games, all starts, 65 innings and 80 hits. He's gotten knocked around, 13 home runs. He's gotten crushed by the long ball, a career ERA of 6.44. He'll be vying for a starting spot with Joe Ross. My guess is he won't crack the season in the rotation, but you got to be the first responder. You've become important. You know Strasburg's going to miss time. Sanchez is older. Ross is coming off of arm issues, and there's going to be an innings restriction there. You can't get through the season with five starting pitchers. Jeremy Hellickson can't really be trusted to go out and make 25 or 30 starts. They need Fetty to step forward. He has not done it yet.
Somebody's got to do it from that group that hasn't done it yet or hasn't done it in a while in Joe Ross's case.
That is your Nats Spotlight. Remember, we're going to spring training next week for the best Nats content on the radio. Make sure you're listening to Grant and Danny all of next week and all of spring training. Speaking of listening to G&D here on The Fan, Case Keenum might be cut. Just feels like a Redskins kind of move to call him, right? FanDuel's got the top five most likely teams to add him listed. The Redskins are on that list. Where did they put them on that board? We'll tell you next. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back, and thanks much for making the show part of your day. FanDuel has come out with the four most likely teams to sign Case Keenum if he's released by the Denver Broncos. Now, we got to tell you first, there's no guarantee that he will be. They could hang on to him. It's unlikely because he's due $20 million against their cap. They could save $11 million in cap space. They have to eat 10 regardless in dead money if they move on from him. But don't you think when you bring in Flacco at $26 million in cap space, to go over 45 for your quarterback position, you just can't do that. That is team suicide for the next year.
Yeah, so I've seen a couple different people. I think Ian Rappaport had this. I may be wrong. But they will attempt. Elway's already spoken to Case Keenum. They're going to attempt to trade him, if not buy out. But goodbye. Thank you for your service.
I always love this, too. We're going to try to trade him, and if we can't, we're going to have to release him. Why am I trading for him exactly? Now, I guess you could say a team like Jacksonville, if they loved him, if Doug Marrone said, I've always admired Case Keenum.
I love him.
He can win us a Super Bowl. we've got to get Case Keenum, and we can't risk losing him in free agency, or we don't want to get into a bidding war. So let's just take on that 1 year and $20 million. That's the only way that you could even make the case that somebody would trade for him, but why on earth would you do that? He'll cost you way less in free agency than the number he's going to be bringing with him to your organization
you
right
would think
now.
Now, right?
At worst, you could sign him for $10 or $12 million. I think you could probably get him closer to $5. Not to mention, there's a better quarterback on the market. Who's going to go crazy to trade for Case Keenum as a bridesmaid when you could trade for Nick Foles? If you're trying to trade for a quarterback, Foles cost you a couple million more bucks than Case Keenum right now.
But you're not taking that $21 million cap hit for Case Keenum. So you're not trading for that, right?
No way. Why would you?
No way.
But if you're trading for him, my point is, why wouldn't you just take a $25 million hit and trade for Nick Foles? It's essentially the same money for a guy who's a better quarterback. So they're not getting a deal done with him. I just can't imagine that. But here are the teams that FanDuel listed as the most likely to trade for him.
Ah.
Let's go through and react in real time here. I don't think you've seen these yet. Number one, the Jaguars.
Makes sense. If you're a bridesmaid, if you can't get the Foles deal done somehow, some way, you need a guy to not screw you because you think you're good enough, right? Then the caretaker, that is Case Keenum, would make sense.
If I'm a Jags fan and I get Nick Foles, I feel great about this coming season. If I'm a Jags fan and I get Case Keenum, I feel like I'm right back where I was. I'm a little bit better off than I was with Blake Bortles, but I am a 6-10 or 7-9 team in waiting. They got to get Nick Foles. They actually should do whatever it takes, in my opinion, to get Foles because they are close enough in other areas where they could have a quick renaissance. I can't see them getting back where they were two seasons ago this year, but you could see them making the playoffs this year with Foles at 9-7 or 10-6 as a wild card, couldn't you?
Yeah.
I can't see that with Keenum.
I mean, even with the seventh pick, though, I mean, they wouldn't have learned their lesson then by taking Leonard Fournette when they had a chance to get a quarterback, and then they'd pass a second consecutive year, or not consecutive, but another year.
You'd have your quarterback in Foles if you believe he could be a starter for the next three
or
4 years.
But I mean, without drafting a guy and getting somebody cheap. They'd be paying huge money?
No.
You wouldn't?
I do that if I need a quarterback. If I've got Nick Foles for the next three seasons, that's a window for me with that defense to try to go win.
But that's, I guess what it depends is the evaluation of how good is Jacksonville really? Because Bortles obviously stunk and was awful and held them back and was terrible.
Last year they had more problems than just him.
But everything else fell apart. And that's kind of my point is, was that just an anomaly? Meaning, dude, we got no chance because of how much this guy sucks? Or were there bigger wrinkles? That's the question.
Probably B, not A.
That's the question that an evaluator would have to answer. So if you think we'll be right back in the spot we were or close to it, if we just have someone that doesn't kill us, then by all means, trade for Foles and give up whatever it takes.
Cody Kessler was every bit as bad as Bortles, but don't forget, the Redskins beat them on a day where Bortles didn't play or hurt them. Tampa Bay Bucks, number two on this list. This one made no sense to me. They've got Jameis Winston still. Obviously, he is completely inconsistent. But he's under contract, and they're going to be keeping him with Bruce Arians now. There's not really a tie between Arians and Keenum that I know of. I also think of Arians as a downfield kind of vertical passing game, big play designer.
Mm-hmm.
That does not necessarily suit Case Keenum's strengths. So you got to help me here because I don't really see this one.
Jameis Winston, every time he's been given a chance, has screwed up, whether it's in an Uber or on the field. He has been a disappointment. Maybe the idea is let's use a Ryan Fitzpatrick type to right the ship. I don't get them trading for that contract, though. Mm-mm. Not that this would be necessarily the destination, but if you want a stabilizer, if you want to spend a little bit more on a insurance policy than it would cost to have, you know, the AJ McCarrons of the world, I could see that, but to me, it shouldn't be the second most likely.
But it wouldn't mean that they traded for him either. It could mean that they just
acquired him,
signed him. Now, obviously, this is the most likely trade destinations, but I think they're also saying like where he ends up.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Winston's there, and at least for one season, Arians sees what he can do with Jameis Winston.
Right, that's what I would suggest.
Number three, the Washington Redskins. Here's what they wrote. Washington had a playoff caliber team with Alex Smith under center, but after he went down, the gruesome leg injury that unraveled their season, spiraling out of control. Smith out for 2019. Colt McCoy also recovering from an injury. Keenum could be a one-year filler at the quarterback spot for the Redskins. Obviously makes some sense. I say no thank you, but it's why we brought it up on the show right after the Flacco deal. It reeks of something that this team would do.
I have no interest in it. None. The negative interest. I have less interest in this than I would in Joe Flacco, who I had no interest in to begin with. This is likely. We did a bold prediction bit. I don't know if it was last week or the week before. My bold prediction was the Redskins will trade for their starting quarterback. This is the kind of thing I thought would happen. They cannot admit how far away they are. You heard Bruce Allen in his comments. Never forget. Now, part of that is, yeah, it's lip service. Yeah, it's what he says in public. Internally, their actions support that belief. We're right there. We're a game out of the playoffs. We're one game away, two games away. We had a chance to go, and Kirk Cousins screwed me against the Giants. I hate him. That's where they are. In their minds, they're right there. Now, evaluators will say, they're not really right there. They got a lot of holes, a lot of problems. Not that much cap space to do it. They think all they need is a stabilizer. All they need is somebody, and Jay Gruden can coach them up, and they'll get the ball to Maurice Harris a bunch of times and be ready to go on offense. I could absolutely see this. Absolutely.
Fourth team listed, last of the four that they put on this list, was the Tennessee Titans. I wouldn't rule that out. I know it sounds crazy at first because they've got Marcus Mariota, but he's going into what is now the final year of that five-year rookie deal.
How much has he been hurt?
Hurt all the time.
All the time, right?
He's got actual nerve problems and all weird things going.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Going on where he has tingling in his shoulder and his arm, supposedly. Also, not that good at throwing footballs.
Ah, yes.
I mean, we can keep pretending like he's something he isn't, or we can just admit that he's not that good of a quarterback. Keenum is not a guy that's leading you anywhere, but if it's Blaine Gabbert or him, who you taking? They're going to give Marcus Mariota, just like the Bucs should with Winston, one more shot. I mean, you kind of owe it to him. He's been decent enough. But they got to start thinking, like Tampa Bay does, about the next couple years at QB. Because neither of those guys, the first two picks in the same draft, have done anything to make you think you should be investing $100 million to keep them around and build around them for several years. I got a text here. My buddy Breadless Joe. He says, I also could see Foles becoming this year's Case Keenum. How about that? In other words, Keenum got overpaid, and everyone just assumed this is one of the best quarterbacks available. If you can't get Cousins, he's the second best option.
He's the consolation.
Well, this year, Nick Foles is the guy that everyone says he won a Super Bowl. You know, he went to the playoffs this past year. He's never been any good other than the couple of years with this offense in Philadelphia, really.
Yeah.
I should say previous offense in Philly as well. With the Eagles twice in two tenures, he's been an NFL-caliber starter or better. Everywhere else, he stunk. So is there a chance someone majorly regrets going and getting him?
Yes. In fact, I'd argue that's what's going to happen.
I think it's more likely.
You get him
not.
Away from the nest, no pun intended, because of the Eagles, and it doesn't look good.
A little bit of pun intended? A little bit of pun?
Some pun intended there.
How much pun was intended?
Medium. Whatever that number is.
Medium pun.
Medium pun.
Wizards play tonight. Antonio Brown wants to be traded. Kareem Hunt's in the NFL. Just a couple of things we can debate between hitting on our leftover pile before we get out of here next on Grant and Danny. Just how expensive is Joe Flacco? I love this tweet that I saw from NFL salary cap and contract expert from overthecap.com. Assuming the Broncos cut Case Keenum, they will rank second in actual cash spent on quarterbacks this year. sixth in cap charges on quarterbacks overall. They would get some offset money when Keenum signs elsewhere. But think about that. Even if they cut Keenum, by paying him to not be there and by paying Joe Flacco to be a little bit better than average, they'll be the second highest grossing team in terms of cash spent this season.
That's the position similar to what the Redskins will be in if they have a guy worth more than a dollar, basically in terms of salary cap. If they go get somebody, it'll be the same thing. You're going to pay $40, $50 million for the quarterback position and not end up with a superstar. It's this Alex Smith deal is screwing them. Now, Denver did this to themselves. The Redskins, you know, have a freak injury to blame, but regardless, that's the position they're in.
Haven't yet hit today the update on Antonio Brown. During our show yesterday, he sent his weird cryptic tweet, and we said this means one of two things. Maybe the Steelers are closing in on a deal for him, and he's been notified, so he's saying goodbye to fans, or he's trying to force their hand. Well, we speculated that it was the latter, and in fact, it was. Brown has officially requested a trade from the Steelers, a source told ESPN's Adam Schefter last night. The news of Brown's trade request came right after the Pro Bowl receiver tweeted his farewell, quote, time to move on and forward, end quote, with a video of him celebrating with his teammates. He's 30 years old. He's been the subject of a lot of trade speculation. Did not show up a couple of days leading up to the team's Week 17 game against the Bengals, then tried to play in the game and wasn't allowed to. His agent is Drew Rosenhaus. January 25th, he did an interview. And he said that he has spoken with the Steelers and expressed Brown's position, but wouldn't divulge what that position was. So the Schefter report tells us he wants to be traded. He'll be 31 in July before the start of training camp. He's due salaries of $12.6 million in 2019, $11 million in 2020, and $12.5 million in 2021. But that doesn't begin to tell the story of his cap number, which is over $20 million the next couple of seasons. There's only going to be a few teams in the NFL that can probably afford to trade for him, one of whom is the San Francisco 49ers, who seem to be the early favorite.
The Colts as well have been bandied about, and that would both would be really good fits. I was thinking about this while you were talking. There are a couple similar situations where, you know, regardless of the level of crazy with Antonio Brown and how much of a malcontent he was really down the stretch of the season, it used to be harmless Facebook Live videos where it's annoying, but you can deal with it. Then it turned into outright quitting and whatever else. But bear with me. Parallel situations. In the NBA, Anthony Davis and his agent, Rich Paul, which is Clutch Sports, which is LeBron's group, have basically declared with nearly 2 years left in Anthony Davis's deal, he wants out, he wants to be traded, and it hamstrings the team. Antonio Brown in a similar circumstance. His bad behavior hamstrings the team, right?
Yeah.
If it was just he played great and wants to leave, it would be easier to spin him around. I'm so generally in favor of player versus owner versus team, right? I want guys in college sports to have agency, and I want players to have agency. They should be able to control where they play, how they play. Now, it stinks when it's my team that gets screwed. It stinks when a guy that is in Washington, D.C. and says, I hate it here. That hurts my feelings. But in general, I want these guys to be able to play, earn as much as possible, live where they want, the whole nine yards. But this is to the nth degree what that looks like in both these cases, right? Where
yeah, this is where you ruin it for everybody else.
Yeah, where teams are screwed now. What are the Pelicans supposed to do?
It's pretty simple, though. Live out your contract like the rest of us figure out a way to do.
Right.
You could be looking around at other jobs and trying to sign elsewhere. You got a job. In the meantime, you show up, you shut your mouth, you do your job. You try to do the best you can every single day between 10 and 2. And if you want another job and you're unhappy, you figure that out on your own time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get it, you present it to the team, or in this case, the company, and you see what they say. Or quit or whatever. But, yeah, this is where it goes awry. Because like you, I am pro player over pro team almost all the time in these holdout situations, all off season long. Go get yours. Get everything you can. Every time you get a chance to bite the apple, do it. I was talking to my mom on the phone this morning driving in. She said, I thought Bryce was going to stay. I said, yeah, I just haven't felt that way. And she goes, I didn't know he was such a jerk. I'm like, he's not a jerk. He gets a chance to go sign somewhere for a ton of money. He should do it. Yeah, but we offered him $300 million, and he might not even get that. Well, A, we'll see. B,
that's a choice.
He thought he was going to get that, and he might be wrong. But I'm with you. When you have the Anthony Davis, and basketball is almost different. I almost separate it completely. But when you have an Antonio Brown acting like this, where you're not showing up, you're completely quitting on your team, you're mad because another wide receiver is getting shine, Juju Smith-Schuster, he's a fool.
Yeah, he's being a child, without question.
I got no time for him. I don't care how good he is. And he is great, by the way. Not on my watch. I'm right. Pulling Mike Singletary. Can't coach with
Can't
him.
Can't do it.
Can't play with
Can't
him.
Can't do it.
Can't win with him. Cannot do it. Not mine. He'll be your problem. And I'll deal with him catching 11 for $173 against me. I'll sleep a little bit better every single night. One other NFL note, Demaryius Thomas cut yesterday by the Texans, has said since he does not plan on retiring. My main priority right now is getting back healthy. Remember, he missed the end of the season, tore his Achilles in
December.
That's
right.
That's a terrible injury for him.
I'd forgotten about that.
Says, I can still play, man. I'm not thinking about retirement. I just don't know where it will be, told the Houston Chronicle. He caught 23 passes for a couple hundred yards and 2 touchdowns in 7 games after the trade before the injury. I didn't think he had a lot left before that trade. Nothing I saw after that trade made me feel like he's certainly number one or maybe even a number two. I'd want him as a veteran in my locker room, you know, at 31 years old. The problem is, when's he going to be healthy? He tore his Achilles in December. That's not a quick recovery.
What number do you think he'll wear for the Redskins?
You know what? He'd be their number one wide receiver if he came here.
Right away, even off the busted Achilles.
On one Achilles, he might. Wizards play tonight. They're on the road. They're very good on the road, Danny.
7-22.
They're only playing the best team in the East, the Milwaukee Bucks, who, by the way, it should be noted, we talk about tanking all the time and being really bad on purpose. The Bucks didn't necessarily tank for an extended period of time. They had a year where they were awful, but they didn't do it the way I prefer to do it, which is to be bad for a couple years on purpose like Philly. They kind of went a different direction. They just drafted really well, which the Wizards haven't been able to do either.
Yeah, when you get Antetokounmpo, everything works out. But not to correct you, but they're in Toronto tonight.
The second best team in the East. I kept saying Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Toronto.
I know what you meant. But Toronto, just to give you the dichotomy, multiple 50-win seasons in a row, a core that was very solid. They drafted well, as you said. They found the Anunobis of the world, the Pascal Siakams, et cetera. Not satisfied. Fired the coach of the year. So desperate to win. Contrast that with their opponent tonight, the Wizards. It would be nice if we made the playoffs. This is a group that's not satisfied, that wants to break through, and tried to do so even with LeBron still in the East. And they, again, just traded a guy that's been a staple for them to go try and get better in Marc Gasol. Whether it works out or not, who knows? But the desperation to win is so refreshing.
Raptors 7:30 tip tonight, so beg your pardon on that. And then they're at the Hornets on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the Pacers at home on Saturday. Little reprieve with the Nets, although nothing's a gimme anymore.
They're the sixth seed.
This coming Wednesday night, and then they're in Boston. So their upcoming road schedule within the conference is treacherous.
They've got 12 road games left, 8 of which are against teams that would be in the playoffs if they started today. And they're already 7-22 on the road. If you're doing the math, it's a 240 winning percentage, 240. To get to their stated goal, 50 wins, if you had a 240 road winning percentage, they'd have to go 40-1 at home. So it's not a quality team.
They're not going to go 40-1 at home this year.
No, they can't do it mathematically because they're 17-11 at home.
So they're not going to go 40-1 at home.
No.
They're not going to get to 50 wins.
No.
Oh, wait, yep. We knew that.
Mathematically eliminated from that.
We're great at goal. Danny, Chad Dukes versus the world is next. If you missed any part of today's show, go to thefandc.com. Big thanks to PJ for filling in today for Dar. Hopefully he feels better. Thanks to Thommy for his hard work as always as well.
Universal DH, CDVTW has the reasons why not.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.